The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning, everyone. Thank God it's Friday. It's Friday the 13th, though. You know what I'm saying? So, gotta be careful. This is Neville James. You're into and analyze this here on 93.1 FM WTJX. NPR here in the United States, Virgin Islands. And we got a great show today. We got the Federal Emergency Management Agency here with us in the first hour. Then we're going to have Miss USVA joining us in hour number two. So what we're going to do is we're going to go straight to it. I think we got the FEMA reps on the line. Good morning, FEMA. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. James. This is Eve Matthews representing FEMA Mitigation.
How are you, Miss Matthews?
I am well. Thank you very much for having us on this morning to talk about the importance of mitigation.
Not a problem. Anyone else will be joining you or just you alone?
Just me from FEMA today and Graciela Rivera from VITEMA.
Yeah, I spoke to Ms. Rivera back in the day. Ms. Rivera, good to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Everything is well. So let's talk mitigation. But before we do that, let's do some homework. Ms. Rivera, the hurricane season, 17 more days, right?
That is correct. And we've been blessed and we're grateful and we really have to prepare for the upcoming year.
That's right. But we see other areas are still being impacted.
Yes. And you know what? One of the things that we've been monitoring over the past few days with the rains is we again still have some areas with significant flooding that we've been monitoring and logging so that we can make sure that we have drainage projects addressing that.
Never thought I'd see the year when we naming storms Ada and Beta and Epsilon and now Iota.
I know. It's been a historical year in more ways than one.
That's for sure. Now, Ms. Matthews, what area you deal with in particular?
Well, I'm with mitigation, and in particular, within the mitigation branch, I'm working with the Hazard Mitigation Grants Program. I am a Hazard Mitigation Grants Program specialist.
And you're part of the plan that's being worked on with UVA, with Dr. Gwanel and that group?
That is a wonderful plan, and I definitely watch and listen to how it's developing. I really enjoyed the workshop that they did last week on Thursday and Friday. But no, my area is a certain grant that is comes into action after the president has declared a disaster. And when the president declares a disaster in a state or a territory, it allows that state or territory to apply for the Hazard Grants Mitigation Program. And those grants are aimed to help the community to build back with mitigation in their rebuilding and to help them to build back with resiliency. So it's an opportunity that we don't want to miss when we've had the misfortune to have a hurricane such as the two that we had in 2017. The president declared a disaster, and that allowed the territory to apply for these grants. And those are the grants that I help monitor and work through with VITEMA.
Well, you know, since you've already gone there, get as specific as you can with respect to how the process works in terms of applying for the grant after the emergency designation and all that.
So after the president declares a disaster and the territory or a state or commonwealth is able to apply, they must first have a mitigation plan to be eligible to apply for these hazard mitigation grant programs. So again, it goes back to the importance of having that mitigation plan that the plan is in good working order, that it has been FEMA approved, and the mitigation plan forms the framework for which we can look at projects to help reduce our risk and vulnerabilities. So when the disasters hit and the president declared a disaster, VITIMA, as the recipient, would let subrecipients and the community know that the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program was in existence, and that if they wanted to apply for projects and for grants through that program, that they could send a notice of intent or a letter of intent to VITIMA. VITIMA would look at the subrecipients' projects that have been presented. They would make sure that those projects were eligible and also that they were consistent with the mitigation plan. And VITIMA and the governor would prioritize what projects are most important for the territory to recover and to build up the infrastructure and to move forward with resiliency and reduce our vulnerabilities.
And then, Ms. Rivera, your agency comes in and does what?
Well, and Eve did cover some of it. What we do is once the disaster declaration has taken place, we do the outreach, like Eve mentioned. That is usually done through presentations and direct visits and meetings. And then we get from the applicable, this could be either government agencies, semi-autonomous, and also private nonprofits. And we ask them if they're interested, once we cover what the requirements are for the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, they submit their notice of intent, and then we let them know whether it's a project that is eligible, is part of the mitigation plan, it is high priority for the territory, and then we proceed with the, I'm assisting them with the development of the application. It then gets submitted to FEMA for their review. That's part of what Eve Matthews does. And then post the review, if there's any questions, they'll reach out to us. We're request for more information. And then hopefully we get the approval, and then we can go ahead and proceed with having that active application move into an active project.
Now, the government coming out of Hurricanes Irma and Maria, we received a pretty hefty appropriation from the federal government to address our rebuild and recovery. This grant is separate from that. How much is it? And pretty much, what's the what are we looking for as it relates to the grant based on our local information that we make available to the federal government? We have a population size. We have X amount of square miles, X amount of resiliency that we're trying to put in place, rehardening the infrastructure. The grant does what? And what is expected out of the grant once it's made available to the territory?
The Hazard Mitigation Grant, the focus for it is to make sure that we put projects in place that will help, protect lives and properties. And it's a mixture. Usually hazard mitigation, this grant is combined, I would say, over about $423 million. And I'm speaking over the, off the top of my head. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. But this grant is, usually hazard mitigation is a percentage of public assistance. So public assistance always comes first. And based on the damage that is assessed after a disaster and the value that is assigned to that, then the Hazard Mitigation Grant gets the applicable funding. Differences between the two projects is that the two programs is that hazard mitigation doesn't require for the project to have been something that was damaged during the storm, because it's purely for mitigation. So if we identify something post the storm that was not actually damaged, but we identify that there's a problem, we can then step in and we can do drainage improvement, acquisition of properties if there's a flood issue, wind retrofit to build it up to code and to make sure that it can sustain the winds from a next disaster. One of the things that I will say that is that PA, the Public Assistance Program, did have a lot of changes that, luckily for the territory, even though the changes were made like a year, at least 2 years, a year and a half to 2 years after the disaster, we had the allowance to extend that to any disaster that happened in 2017. So in that, we were able to get the DRA and the 428, which actually expanded the public assistance program significantly. That expansion, of course, does include additional funding, which in turn trickles down to additional funding for the hazard mitigation. So we do have a lot of opportunities with the recovery funding to really make sure that we safeguard as many areas in the territory as possible. But on the hazard mitigation grant program right now, active projects we have, for example, some of them are drainage and road improvements. We also have wind retrofits of some critical facilities. We're working very closely, for example, with the VI Police Department and the VI Fire Services. We did submit for an acquisition of properties that are in the special flood hazard areas. We did get approved recently to do an analysis of the territory's culverts and areas that need slope stabilization mitigation. So those are the kind of things that we're doing in our program.
How do we reconcile what the grant provides from a I want to connect the purpose of the grant with the actual funding for the recovery. So because the grant is supposed to provide that framework to allow for when the opportunities present themselves. Of course, we wish they never did, because these opportunities are a result of catastrophic storms. But the grant is the framework, right? The template to allow for us to go about getting us back to where we want to go and making us better. That's my understanding of the grant, correct? The purpose of the grant.
That's a purpose, but that's the purpose of most of the disaster recovery funding. So I don't want to narrow it down to just a hazard mitigation program.
Here's what I'm saying, right? Hazard mitigation, right, is about providing relief, right, for the most part.
Hazard mitigation is more of being proactive to avoid additional damage or loss of life. So we identify areas that need improvement to serve us better in the next disaster, which we hope doesn't happen, and we step in and provide that project.
Okay, so that's the foundation for what hazard mitigation is about, right? You're being proactive, you're being preventative, right? We're not dealing with after the fact impact. We're trying to do things. The plan itself is about allowing us to be in a position, in the event the worst case scenario is realized, that we could handle that, right? That's what the hazard mitigation plan is all about. Right. Okay. Good.
Correct.
That's the foundation.
Correct.
That's the foundation, right?
Yeah.
Now, as time goes on, there is a need to update this particular plan because your population grows, you suffer deterioration over time. Is that agree? Can we agree on that?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yes. The plan really should be a living document. It's very important that you, have a comprehensive plan, a plan that you're maintaining, a plan that you're tying back all your projects to, that any projects that you ask for funding are consistent with the plan and are consistent with the vulnerabilities and the risks that the plan found were unique to our territory.
Okay, what we do is we'll take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk about the plan in a more comprehensive and detailed form so that the public will understand exactly the pointed areas that we're looking at. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, good. We got Eve Matthews from the Federal Emergency Management Agency and Ms. Graciela Rivera from VITIMA. and they're talking about the hazard mitigation plan and the grant that is made available to us from the federal government here in the Virgin Islands. We'll be back right after this on Analyze This.
U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department's police officers and civilian support staff provide services to the general public 24/7. This department has the responsibility to provide professional service to you at all times. The VIPD is working harder to meet that goal. Please get into the habit of using the compliment forms to commend officers who provide a quality standard of service. It's a morale booster for the recipient. If an officer or civilian needs to improve their customer service, feel free to submit a complaint form. Compliment and complaint forms are available in the lobby of all police stations, at public libraries, some government businesses, and from any patrol officer. Desk officers can also assist you to complete this form. Secure drop boxes are at all police station lobbies. Just insert your form and internal affairs agents will process your complaint impartially and fairly. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department.
The Department of Labor is happy to announce the IVR system, the Interactive Voice Response System, is for unemployment insurance claimants to receive information regarding their benefits and other general updates. So stay tuned for more on the IVR system and look out for notices so that you can try today. Once you receive your notice, you can try the hotline at 340-715-5744. That's the Interactive Voice Response System for unemployment insurance updates.
And we are back here on Analyze This, and we're fortunate enough to have Ms. Graciela Rivera from Vitima and Ms. Eve Matthews with an S.
Matthews with an S.
Ms. Eve Matthews from FEMA. We're talking about the Virgin Islands hazard mitigation plan. So, if you will, let's cycle back a little bit to the actual creation of the plan. Who comes together to provide the data to make this document what it is in terms of representing the territory's current condition and what we have to do to actually get it to where we want it to be in this proactive, preventative mindset that we're dealing with? Ms. Matthews.
That's a very good question, Mr. James, because the mitigation plan is so important that it is the framework from which everything will move forward, that it is, UVI is helping to formulate the mitigation plan, and they understand the importance of having a very comprehensive team and a lot of voices to have input. Stakeholders from every area of the territory should have a voice in letting us know what the vulnerabilities are for them, what the shortcomings are for them, and when a disaster hits, how they may be affected. There are different groups in our community that we need to take into consideration when we're making a plan so that we're answering needs and reducing vulnerabilities and risks for all the population, not just some. So it's very important that we have a broad group, a comprehensive group from all areas of the territory. All stakeholders should have a voice in brainstorming with the mitigation plan in its formulation.
Now, infrastructure and our water and power distribution are actually, that's the foundation for any jurisdiction, right? How do we factor in our local Department of Public Works and our Water and Power Authority into providing the important data we need to make this plan, the substantive document and sustainable document that we want it to be, Ms. Rivera?
Okay, as Eve mentioned, you know, we are working, my team is working with UBI. UBI is taking the lead on the preparation of this hazard mitigation resilience plan. And it is being taken a step further to a traditional mitigation plan because we really want to make sure that it captures everything that's needed. Eve was correct when she mentioned that there's a lot of outreach going on with the multiple agencies, the private nonprofits, coordination with expertise from the mainland to be sure that we gather the best and greatest data on what was found during the storm and post the storm. Of course, you know, agencies like DPW, DPNR, Water, WAPA, VI Waste Management, those are all key agencies that we have been in communication with because there's multiple components that we're doing. We're doing capability assessments to ensure that, you know, we have the skill sets and we have the ability to address the needs for not just disaster recovery, but mitigating before a disaster. But beyond that, there's also communication with the Office of the Lieutenant Governor to update the cadastral maps. You know, there's a lot of collection of data and it's trying to be pooled together in a database that's shared across multiple agencies when it's completed. So everyone has data. One of the things that I think we spoke about the last time that Dr. Greg and I were on the show is data is key to develop a good, strong application for additional funding, be it on the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program or the BRIC Program or the Flood Mitigation Assistance Program. So that's one of the things that we're really looking forward to with the Hazard Mitigation Resilience Plan, getting that data. But the collaboration is there with the agencies. We do have a steering committee. We do have public outreach. Yes, COVID did throw a little bit of a tweak on the whole entire schedule and the methodology, but we've had three workshops. And the last one we did last week was done via Zoom. And it was actually very successful. I mean, you know, the conversation, the group of people, we had a lot more agencies attending this one than we did the last one in St. Thomas last year. So you're seeing that communication and that integration. Water, power, wastewater. Those are all sectors that have been deemed telecommunication, health, transportation. Those are all sectors that have been deemed very important to assess and to make sure that we have the necessary resilience in those areas. So, I think we're doing some good outreach, and I think it's been, for the most part, very well received. Like I said, COVID did throw a little bit of a challenge there, but I think we've gotten through that. We have a new norm, quote unquote, and we're moving forward.
What's the frequency with making this document available to the federal government, or does this just happen after a designation, emergency designation?
No, you have to have a plan in order to get funding. So, and the plan usually has a life of 5 years. As Eve said, it is a dynamic document, and if you're doing it well, you should be having, you know, your regular meetings with the stakeholders to ensure that you can update and revise the plan as needed.
Now, I know the government is responsible for this, but what about the private sector? Do they play a role in this? I mean, I'm sure they have intel that we think is valuable. Everything, you know, shouldn't be government reliant. I know it's a public service. And it's a public document, but at the same time, I'm sure the areas in the public sector that could provide critical information to actually strengthen the document, Ms. Matthews?
Yes, we would agree. And we invite stakeholders in the community to have a voice, to let us know their concerns, their vulnerabilities, and risks that may affect them in particular. So yes, we are looking, of course, at business owners, the economy, how we can support our economy after a disaster, how we can bounce back with resiliency. And even for our residents, homeowners, renters, the community at large needs to have a voice and needs to be considered in that document.
Now, so as a result, just a suggestion going forward, would you factor in town hall meetings, or would last week's webinar on Zoom be considered the town hall meeting that you're looking at?
No, that was more of a workshop, and we actually had representatives speak about what they've done for the plan. We did give an overview of some of the assessments that have been completed and some of the mapping. But we do have public outreach. We've had some that were, you know, we had one at the airport here. We've had them in St. Thomas. We've had them in St. John. They've now become Zoom meetings, but we do have them frequently. We post them on Facebook, and they're usually a Zoom meeting that happens, I would say, from 6 to 7 in the evening. And we've had, I don't have the exact count, but we've had a few. And what we did the last two times is we focused on a disaster, and we kind of spoke of, on that. And we use it as an opportunity to also get feedback, because you don't always capture everything at a very high level. And sometimes when you speak to the community, you get a lot of details that you can then incorporate.
Okay. So let's talk about, let's hone in on the agencies now. Definitely the University of the Virgin Islands. They provide multiple layers of information for us, right? In this case, the primary focus for UVI is what as it relates to the document?
And they're actually the lead on getting putting the document together. Mm-hmm. So they're the forefront. So okay. They're doing the necessary outreach with the agencies. They are the ones who are monitoring the assessments that are being done. And of course, some of it is being done in conjunction with other groups. They have a relation, and that's another reason why the University of the Virgin Islands was such a good selection, because they do have pre-existing relationship with other universities that have information. So just to cite a few, you know, there's the Indiana University, University of South Florida, Texas A&M at Corpus Christi. They have a very good working relationship with the Naval Postgraduate School. So that helps on that external side. And then on the internal, you know, like I said, they're working with the agencies on compiling data from everything health issues with the Department of Health to include that in the plan so that we can identify the people at most risk, which would include those with illnesses and age.
What about property and procurement? In terms of our inventory, do they play a role or not?
They do play a role, and, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, UVI really does think very granularly. So they're doing that. They are speaking with, water distribution companies to verify how much water do you usually keep on hand. So and then with that information, we can identify if something really critical happens, let's say a significant drought, how long do we have water? What are the challenges that must be addressed? And that, of course, ties to the resilience factor.
Okay, so you've...
So, yes, inventory of the territory is a part of it.
Okay. Yeah.
And because the workshop last week on Thursday and Friday was through Zoom, you can actually access it, and your listeners can access it on Facebook if they missed it or if they want to listen to certain parts of it again or in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And the presentations are there. Ms. Rivera presented, did a wonderful job. The presenters were, as Ms. Rivera said, some from the States, some from the BVI. Excellent presentations. So a wealth of information there right on Facebook.
Now, one of our biggest concerns coming out of the storms were our public schools. And the public schools, they serve two primary purposes, obviously. They're educational facilities, but in many instances, they're also shelters. What are we looking at in terms of what the document is going to provide to shore up our public facilities? From an educational standpoint, but the purpose that they serve in the aftermath of storms.
Well, one of the things that is being done as part of the plan is they're looking at the existing infrastructure and they're working together, I believe, don't quote me on this, I think it's with Rutgers University, on an analysis of the life cycle of the structure and if it was damaged, what would the repairs possibly be? And one of the purposes of that is if something wasn't captured in a project, that gives us additional mitigation opportunities for other things for the future. But yes, they're looking at a full analysis of our current infrastructure within the territory.
Now, you know that in particular here on St. Croix, you know, I keep bringing this up, but our youngest educational facility is 25 years old. Youngest. These are the things that we need to look at because they serve multi-purposes, and it's important that we get into the business of what we did in the 70s, and in particular in the 70s, but prior to and a little bit after, in terms of school construction, because these are large facilities, and they are critical in dealing with the mass adverse impact of a hurricane, where hundreds, if not thousands, of people are losing their homes. And they need some place to stay while they resituate themselves until they can get back into their residence.
That is correct. The majority of the schools, though, because they did sustain damage during the storm, they're being covered under the public assistance program. And there is conversation about full replacement on a few. That is not my expertise. I am part of some of the conversations, so I do know that there's a lot of great work being done with the schools and the Department of Education on that. Because of the fact that it's being covered on the public assistance side, I don't have any hazard mitigation grant project with the school, but there's a lot of work. And it's a slow process, so I know it can be kind of frustrating not to see, you know, shovels in the ground and hammers swinging when we pass our schools, but there is a lot of work being done.
Now, Ms. Matthews, when the document is just about done, is it presented? Does FEMA come here locally to help us wrap up the document, or are they just sitting in Washington waiting for us to send the document to them to review it and do what they have to do?
Well, yes, FEMA does have to review it, and they do have to approve it. The document needs to be completed, and also they can reach out to FEMA for technical assistance or guidance. We have planners who have that expertise. We have building science who can offer expertise. And then once that plan is complete, they can ask FEMA to review it. FEMA can give them comments and suggestions before they to tweak it as such, and then it's hopefully approved, and then a standard mitigation plan is for 5 years, and that is what we are doing. We're doing for this territory, we're doing a standard mitigation plan. Some states would have an enhanced mitigation plan. But I'm correct, Graciela, we are doing a standard mitigation plan?
That is correct.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to
If I could just chime in.
Yeah, go ahead.
For a quick second. Yeah, I just wanted to say that FEMA has been very supportive of this plan, and we actually have one of their planners, Mr. John, also called Jack, Heidi, and he is part of all our regular biweekly meetings, and he provides a lot of support and correspondence and ideas. So They've been involved.
Okay, good. So I'm glad that you mentioned that there are other universities that are working. You said they work with us, right? University of South Florida, Texas A&M, and Corpus Christi, Indiana University. They work with the University of the Virgin Islands or the Virgin Islands government as a whole?
With the University of the Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Rutgers University is also one.
Okay, Rutgers. Okay. Okay, so we have... We have universities from the Southwest, from the Midwest, from the Southeast, and from the Northeast. Okay, that's
yes.
A good thing. I like that.
And the Naval, yeah, we can't forget the Naval Postgraduate School. I mean, they do a very good job on analysis and presenting data. So if you don't have time to look at the whole entire recording of the of the workshop. If you could, you know, zoom in on some key, you would be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, good. When we come back, I want to talk about the federal government's relationship with the territory. Of course, you know, we're insular possession and we're under the Interior Department. Okay, so I wanted to talk about that a little bit as well. Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies. We'll be back right after this. Analyze this on a gorgeous Friday in paradise. We'll be right back.
Want to work part-time, doing your part in keeping the Virgin Islands safe? Join the Virgin Islands Police Department and become a police auxiliary officer. The starting salary for a VIPD police auxiliary officer is $30,715 per year for a 30-hour work week. For more information and to apply, visit jointhevipd.com. This message is brought to you by the Virgin Islands Police Department.
Bank of St. Croix, we offer a suite of consumer and business services with mobile banking, mobile deposit, and online banking. You can bank with us from anywhere 24/7. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay, 340-773-8500, and one in Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin. Lately, I've been broadcasting Morning Edition live from my basement. When social distancing started, my colleague Rolando got on his bicycle and brought me all the equipment that I needed to work from home. Making public radio is totally a team effort. And if you're one of the listeners who donate to this NPR station, you're part of the team. Thank you. Together, we keep NPR on air.
Please donate right now at WTJX.org.
Analyze this on a picturesque Friday here in the Virgin Islands. And we've got Miss Eve Matthews from FEMA, and we have Miss Graciela Rivera from Vitima. Miss Matthews, where are you right now?
I am on the island of St. Thomas.
How's the weather over there? That's the reason why I asked. How's the weather in St. Thomas? Because it's lovely here on St. Croix.
Isn't it lovely to see the blue sky and a little bit of sunshine after all that rain?
That's right. That's right. And I think Ms. Rivera would agree with you that it's nice to not have gray skies and rain and all that stuff after 3 days of pretty much solid rain in the territory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Yes. Now, let's talk about our current relationship with the federal government. You know, we are a United States insular possession, and the Department of Interior has oversight and jurisdiction over us, American Samoa, Guam, Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, and Puerto Rico is not under the Department of Interior. They have a special arrangement with the White House. What is the relationship between, let me ask this question. Since we're working, the premise for today's discussion is the working document that has a 5-year lifespan. I'm assuming that FEMA gets this document as well after it's done?
Yes.
Okay. And this document allows for FEMA to have a foundation for our current status as it relates to our infrastructure, correct?
It's really that the mitigation and resilience plan.
A mitigation and resilience plan, yes, correct. Yes.
Is really the foundation and framework for our community, for our territory at large, to have ownership and control over how they have a vision for their future and their community and how they want to reduce risks and vulnerabilities and increase resiliency and independence. It will be wonderful with the influx of funding that FEMA has brought, that the territory can move forward with their projects and build a more resilient future for the people of the Virgin Islands.
this influx of grant money, if used well and on wonderful projects that make a difference, will be the foundation for a much brighter future for the territory, because we will be investing in our communities and in our infrastructure and making things better on every level.
The document itself, right? After the research is done locally, does the governor's office have any role in this?
Yes, they do. Once it's completed, it is submitted to FEMA for their review. You can actually get comments from them or suggestions, and they approve. But the final step is the approval of the governor. He must sign off on the document for it to then be an active eligible document.
This is I like the idea of that. So the layer, the last local layer after the University of Virgin Islands and the different entities here do what they have to do in terms of making the information, incorporating the information into the document. The governor signs off on it, and then it's in transit to the federal government.
No, it actually goes to the federal government for them to approve it, because you don't want to have it going back and forth. So they'll review it, they'll make recommendations or suggestions, and when it's finalized, they will state that it's okay. But the final approval does not actually kick in until it's approved by the governor, and he must sign off on it. And then that goes to FEMA for it to be finalized fully.
Okay. And you said the funding level is $423 million? That was the number you mentioned?
Let me find the exact number.
Okay.
It'll just take me a quick second.
And that's over a 5-year window, right? Not annually.
No, that is actually tied. What we do on the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program is we submit projects, they get approved, and they have a specific amount awarded to them.
Okay.
So, and it's just to throw again, one of the things that we look for with some of the projects that we're doing, an example, some of the projects we're doing with DPNR and DPW, is to get information that we can then use for projects that are not, they're not disaster recovery opportunities. And that's the BRIC that I mentioned previously and the Flood Mitigation Assistance Program.
Okay. I'm trying to just throw out some ideas here to see how we could strengthen the process, because the actual document is very, very valuable to the territory. Of course, I mentioned earlier the potential for incorporating the private sector, even though, this is a public sector responsibility. The private sector does have a role to play in this. How do we get the young people involved in this? Or is this all professionals making determinations?
No, actually, with the public outreach, we do encourage to get, we want to have representation from all across the board. We do have some, I'm going to use the term millennials, working as part of the Hazard Mitigation Resilience Plan team at UVI. And so they provide that additional perspective. So even in the creation of the individuals working on the plan on the UVI side, we did try to make sure we had a representation of the community, and that include age group also.
Ms. Matthews, you wanted to piggyback on that?
Well, I would like to say that I really, at FEMA, really appreciate the valuable choice to use UVI to ask them to assist in creating the plan. Because universities are places of innovation and places where we have young minds that need to know that they have a say in and a voice in their future here in the territory. So it was a wonderful choice to ask UVI to take on the creation and the formulation of this plan. So FEMA is very happy and commend them for doing that. And we believe it will be a very strong, comprehensive plan when it is complete, and it will be the framework for our territory to move forward in a robust and sustainable way.
Okay. Now, I know this is about hazard mitigation. Talk about what the census in 2020, because this is a census year, and the census is, you know, a responsibility of the Virgin Islands through the University of Virgin Islands. How does the census impact what we're dealing with? It has to, because it talks about population.
Absolutely. The census is so important, and we really encourage everybody to participate and not to be reluctant, because by doing a complete census, that is, again, a framework, a map of what our territories look like and the needs and the shortcomings that we have. And without a complete census, we would be at a loss to move forward in a sustainable way.
Ms. Rivera, census, I know Mr. Frank Mills has mentioned that our numbers look like it's going to be below what it normally is, number one. Number two, we recently had an election where we only had 17,000 voters territory-wide participating. So I think that adds to that, you know, that belief. We're only 33% of our voting population participated. How does a reduction in population, or does it impact how the financial formula for us to generate, for us to get money from the federal government, number one, and number two, what are we looking at as it relates to hazard mitigation and population?
Well, you know, traditionally the funding for these disaster recovery is tied to the damage, the damage in the infrastructure post the assessment. So population does have an impact because, of course, you know, it talks about, you know, locations that are being used by bodies, which is what we're mitigating ultimately for the protection of life. One of the you said that, and I just wanted to mention real quick, one of the slides that UVI presents when they talk about the Hazard Mitigation Resilience Plan is that point that you mentioned. You know, our population has been decreasing, and this is not new. This has been going on, well, we know since Hovensa's closure. But the amount of infrastructure that we have in the territory has been exponentially increasing. And that is a factor because, of course, once you build more, you do have to plan proactively as to what that building, what that road, what that construction does to, you know, the flow of water, the impact from disasters. So it's just interesting to see that those numbers are actually moving in opposite from each other.
So you're saying that consumption is increasing while population is decreasing.
Correct.
Wow, that's a weird dynamic. That's a weird dynamic,
yes,
and it's actually not good though when you think about it. You know, there's something fundamentally wrong with consumption going up and population decreasing. That's from a logical perspective. Because you would want things to be as symmetrical as possible.
Correct. Because, you know, then you're talking about, you know, the impact of maintenance and then the tax base and that what that means for revenue. So, yes, it's an interesting
dynamic
situation you could speak about that for a day.
Yeah, but it also speaks to efficiency levels. Remember, a lot of things that you do, you want to be efficient in whatever you're doing, because you don't want to use more than you have to get something done. And that's just a general principle about efficiency. Waste is very, very, you know, serious, because you never know when you're going to need it.
There are multiple challenges with that, you know, because of the meaning of a historical building. Many of our locations are historical. We know both town areas are completely, for the most part, historical. There's a cost associated with that. So it's finding a balance where we can improve these structures so that we can, you know, make as much of them as possible usable again. And then you add to the mix that there's additional factors too with climate change and the seawater rising. What does that mean for those infrastructure that are on the beachfront. So it's multiple things. Like I said, it's something that you can speak about for a day. You can have a workshop just on that because it's not easy, straightforward. There are a lot of components that are affecting that.
Now, Ms. Matthews, let me ask this question because I know we're getting ready to wrap up the conversation. When we're looking at a hazard mitigation plan for the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, as opposed to a hazard mitigation plan for a contiguous state, right? Are there any built-in I don't want to say handicaps, but because that's not the right word, but contingencies, right? I think that's a better word. Contingencies for us, because we're islands, we're separated. We're you're putting a contingency plan together for the state of Kansas. You know, everything is in one plane, as opposed to the Virgin Islands, where there's water involved. What have you? What kind of benefits are allowed for us because of our unique situation, where we're a group of islands, the four insular possessions that I represent, that I just recognize.
That's a very good question, Mr. James.
I think the word that I was looking for is allowances. Are there any additional or specific allowances for the insular possessions because of our uniqueness?
Right. Well, for example, one that I can speak to is that usually when we are providing grant financing, we would say we will give FEMA will give 75% federal dollars, and the state, the municipality, the territory will need to bring 25% of the funding for any grant. But in our case, here in the Virgin Islands, FEMA waived the 25% and is covering 100% of the grant. Yes, so that is wonderful. And FEMA tries to be flexible. FEMA tries to lean in. They try to assist where they can, and if they see a community like ours that is small, that is, as you say, unique, and maybe not the most rich or economically able, they will say, we are going to change that 75-25%. And we're going to offer 100%, because it might be the difference in not being able to do the mitigation project if the territory had to come up with 25%.
Okay. Well,
we definitely want to assist in this recovery, not miss the opportunity to use mitigation strategies in rebuilding. Mm. Much better to have a plan and to take our time and to build back with mitigation strategies incorporated into the project so that we can actually eliminate risk the next time a hurricane, tsunami, earthquake, drought comes to the Virgin Islands. So FEMA definitely leans in and tries to be very flexible and understanding of our unique situation here in the Virgin Islands.
Graciela Rivera and Eve Matthews from VITIMA and FEMA, respectively, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And we appreciate all the hard work you do on behalf of the people of the territory so that representation is fair and definitely in effect. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I did want to let you know that the total for the hazard mitigation grant for the two disaster was $461.9 million.
$461.9, okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Ms. Matthews.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, good. That was Ms. Eve Matthews and Graciela Rivera from FEMA and VITIMA, respectively. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.